Okay, welcome everyone. Welcome to the beginning of this year's incredible preparing for Pesach season. It's unbelievable. I was actually earlier this afternoon watching the video of last year's shiur in this very spot, in this very Zoom environment. I look about 10 years younger, just for the record. But for the most part, we've come so far. And I think we just have to, before we jump into preparing for Pesach, just take a moment to reflect and express a sense of Hakaras HaTov and Hodah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that we are where we are, that we're having a very different conversation than we had a year ago, and that the Ribbono Shel Olam has given us already many of the tools that Be'ezus Hashem will help us even further normalize moving forward. I want to make an introductory comment that actually relates last year to this year. And it has to do with a principle in halacha called Shas Hadchak. Shas Hadchak means extenuating circumstances. Very fascinating experience that I had a number of months ago for the Yeshiva University Hanukkah dinner. So they were interviewing Rav Herschel Schechter, and we are all very familiar with his extraordinary support in Piskei Halacha that was so prolific and guiding and central and important to hundreds of communities and thousands of people throughout the pandemic. And they were asking him, you know, about his innovative approach to dealing with this situation, about the chidushim and about how he was able to deal with so many new concepts and new ideas and new piskei halacha. And his response and his reaction was fascinating because he did not perceive that to be the experience at all. He explained in a very eloquent manner that the halachic system encompasses direction and guidance for all circumstances. And built in, embedded within the system itself, is exactly what to do when you are in a circumstance that allows a more robust and a more ideal set of realities in terms of how that should guide your observance. And built into the system is the exact directives of what to do when you find yourself in a more compromised circumstance where the ideals have to be recalibrated to the reality of the moment. And so there are no chidushim. There were no chidushim last year. There are no kulas, there are no chumras last year to this year. There are different circumstances. And in each circumstance, the ideal is to measure up to the greatest aspiration that we could have to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the most meaningful, passionate, connected, ideal way possible. And what that looked like last year is not what it looks like this year, is not what it looks like 2 years ago, and probably won't be what it looks like next year. Each situation needs to be addressed in the context of where it is. And where are we? We are in a somewhat of a transitional environment, where many of the things that we were terrified of a year ago at this moment in time, we were basically on a lockdown. We couldn't go anywhere, couldn't do anything. Even the shopping was curtailed. And so we had all sorts of flexibilities that were evoked in order to deal with those circumstances. If one is in circumstances of compromise or stress or difficulty, those very same principles can be activated any year. Those are not special pandemic dispensations. They are true based on whatever the situation is. That's the beauty of halacha from the word holech. It gives us a guide. It gives us a mahalech. It gives us a path through any situation within which we find ourselves. And so therefore, as we re-encounter Pesach this year, how are we to approach it? We're to approach it the exact same way we approached it last year. We are to embrace the opportunity to try and engage all of the elements of preparing for and observing Pesach in the most ideal way possible, even though it's going to look a little different this year than it did last year. There are certain circumstances this year that are also compromising, and there's no question. We are not out of this. We are still maintaining in public spaces, social distancing, certainly, and even in private spaces, there is effect of the vaccine on personal conduct, which we'll get to a little later. But at the end of the day, we're searching for the ability to do our best. And so therefore, you all know, because we've had this shiur for many years, that I'm a big fan of putting your all into Pesach, but putting your all in the context of the right priorities. Putting your all into Pesach is an opportunity to internalize Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, a redemptive religious personality, to give this story over to the next generation, if you're blessed to be able to have that opportunity at your Pesach Seder, to even concretize the experience for yourself, to make sure that the opportunity to expel chametz from our homes is done in the proper way. But what we don't do is we don't obsess in an unhealthy way over things that perhaps are not even opportunities and expectations that lead to a more ideal Pesach, but simply have just become a outlet for hypervigilance that's not demanded, expected, or even appropriate. So it's a balance. It always has been a balance. It always will be a balance. And we're going to get there together tonight. So feel free to use the chat to ask questions. But Be'ezus Hashem, we have a lot of material to cover, and we'll go through it together. So first of all, before I start, I'm sure everyone here is aware we have a unique calendar opportunity this year. And that is that Erev Pesach coincides with Shabbos. So we'll be having a special shiur, I think, next Monday night to look at those issues in particular. We're not going to cover those issues in depth. We're going to mention a few of them in passing because they're important in terms of just starting to think about preparation for Pesach, but we'll get there soon. So let's start this year the way we started last year. Where are you going to be for Pesach? Because that certainly has a lot to do with what your Pesach preparation looks like. So my advice to everyone is to obviously consider the medical and the health issues in making that assessment, to do it together with your own personal medical guide. The guidance from the CDC is that those who are vaccinated can mix with each other in small settings without social distancing and without masks. And they can, in larger settings, the guidance is different. And so therefore, that does open up the opportunity to be able to have more expansive potential Siddurim and Yomim Tovim, certainly than we did last year. So that's an exciting thing. I want to encourage everyone to recognize that for some people who spent the entire pandemic in a posture of tremendous caution, it's challenging to kind of reintegrate and to normalize in certain ways. And to take it step by step, maybe a three-day yontif with a 10-hour Seder is not the first time that you gather grandchildren and grandparents. Maybe you think about doing it a little more incrementally, making sure that everyone is comfortable, recognizing that there's a lot of emotion and anxiety that is associated with all of this. Some of it is rooted in legitimate medical concerns. Some of it is just habituated as normal in terms of how human beings relate to such an extended period of vigilance and of caution. And so it's something to just think about and to be cautious with and to be careful with, but to be deliberate in terms of, as with Hashem, being able to create opportunities to be a little more expansive. An email is going to go out tonight or early tomorrow about Mechiras Chametz. Mechiras Chametz last year, if you recall, was entirely online, and that was the ideal Mechiras Chametz for that circumstance. Now that most of us, almost all of us, are out of our homes interacting with people in some way, shape, or form, so Mechiras Chametz will return to something that we'll have the pleasure of doing live. We'll do it in the basement of the shul. We'll do it with all of the necessary precautions. And if for some reason you are at high risk, you are uncomfortable coming to such an environment, you feel you're in quarantine because your sixth grader got exposed or some circumstance, please be in touch with me and we'll figure out the most ideal way to do it for you. Every circumstance has an ideal approach and we'll figure out a way that makes you comfortable. So that to remind everyone as well that last year, many people bought new kelim, new vessels for Pesach. If you recall, last year, before Pesach, we were not so comfortable using the kelim mikvah. So many of these kelim, many of these vessels that required tevila were sold to non-Jews, because you don't have to tovel items that belong to a non-Jew. We did this largely through the RCA, Beth Din of America. Rabbi Weissman coordinated this. And now that you're going back into the closet to pull out all of the Pesach kelim, don't forget that if these kelim have been bought back from that non-Jewish individual, then they absolutely require to be toveled. They absolutely must be toveled in order to use them even one time for Pesach. If for some reason you're still not in a situation where you could tovel kelim, so be in touch. They are continuing to sell kelim for this Pesach as well, for those who require such a thing. If you sold kelim through the Beth Din of America, you should have received an email inviting you to go ahead and purchase them back. If you did not, be in touch with me and we'll help work it out together. But that is something that does require somewhat of a correction from last year in terms of how we handled things. So this year, Erev Pesach is on Shabbos. And just to give everyone a heads up, even though we'll have a special shiur devoted to it, that means that the Tanis Bechorim is on Thursday, not on Friday. And therefore, there'll be a Siyum in Shul on Thursday. It means that Bedikas Chametz is going to take place on Thursday night, even though it doesn't lead into Erev Pesach. It means that Bir Chametz, the burning of Chametz, which I believe will be coordinated by the town as well, will take place Friday morning at the general time that it would usually take place. And it does mean that we're going to be davening super early on Shabbos, so that we could get that final Shabbos meal in before the time of eating chametz becomes prohibited, which will be on Shabbos morning. So we will discuss all of that on Monday night, Bezras Hashem. There are a lot of details, how you handle all the meals, how you handle the bread being in your home. But suffice it to say, it's all, we've been through it before together. We've had an Erev Pesach Shechal B'Shabbos together. And we did great then, we'll do great now. It's a chance, by the way, there's one really beautiful aspect to it. There are many beautiful aspects to it. But one of the beautiful aspects to it is it really does remove that Erev Pesach grueling exhaustion, because it gives you a Shabbos that's a pretty long afternoon because you're eating cholent at like 8 o'clock in the morning. And then you have all the way till Mincha to rest, to relax, to take a walk, Be'ezus Hashem, it'll be nice outside, to take a nap, and you'll go into the Seder a little bit more refreshed and energized and not feeling like you're coming off of the craziest day in the world. So I happen to remember this as being quite beautiful and quite energizing and wonderful, and Be'ezus Hashem, everyone will find it that way as well. Okay, now let's make Pesach. So here we are, we're in our homes, literally in our homes, and we have to make Pesach. So the first thing we have to know is what's chametz and what's not chametz. So on Pesach, there are a number of mitzvos. There are 3 mitzvos aseh, there are 5 mitzvos lo aseh. The mitzvos aseh are tashbisu, to eradicate chametz, achilas matzah, to eat matzah, and oh boy, the price of matzah is getting there. I think I spent more on matzah than on tefillin this year. And then there's Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, the mitzvah of telling over this the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. The prohibitions relate to the prohibitions to eat chametz, own chametz, possess chametz, get benefit from chametz. So this is part of the Pesach experience, expelling chametz from our home, the mitzvah of tashbisu. So in order to do that, we have to know what is chametz. So chametz is basically anytime one takes one of the 5 grains and combines it in contact with water for more than 18 minutes without manipulation. If you combine the grain with water and you're manipulating it the whole time, so then that does not create chametz. But if it's left without any sort of working at the chametz, so then with the dough, then it becomes chametz. Now, So obviously bread is chametz, and obviously foods that have ingredients that come from bread or have some type of leavening agent are all chametz. What about food that's not necessarily edible? Okay, so now, all right, so we start with the kitchen and the pantries. We know we have to get rid of the chametz. There's a minhag that some have not to sell chametz gamur. Last year, we did not have that. We did not observe that minhag, certainly not in this home. And the reason for that was really twofold. Number one, there were limitations, if you recall, on supply. And number two, even more important, which even resulted in the advice to actually buy more chametz before Pesach, is we didn't want a rush on the supermarkets after Pesach and to have so many people hitting the supermarkets at once that was not considered a healthy thing. This year, where the supply is in abundance, and that is not necessarily something that we have learned a lot about the transmission of this virus and how to keep ourselves safe in different spaces. So if that's something that you are very concerned about, then we could discuss it. And certainly the ideal would be then to go ahead and sell that chametz. If this is your minhag not to sell chametz gomer, so then not to sell actual chametz, like bread and bread products, then this would be a year to reintroduce that minhag and re-embrace it entirely. But what about now we've gotten rid of the bread and the crackers and the pasta and the flour and everything that's chametz? What about food that is not edible? Not edible. So food that is nifsal ma'achilas adam, food that is not edible by a human being, is still prohibited on Pesach. That's not prohibited in general kashrus, but it's still prohibited on Pesach. Food that is nifsal ma'achilas kelev, food that is not even considered edible by a dog, that food is permitted on Pesach. Since pretty much the entire Pesach community has bought dogs in the last 11 months, we have lots of opportunities. Do not start feeding deodorant to dogs to see what happens. But now there are a lot of opportunities. Everybody's an expert on what the dogs eat and what the dogs don't eat. So consult, anybody who you find roaming the neighborhood from 1 to 3 in the afternoon. So this is the din. If it's nifsal ma'achilas kelev, it is permitted on Pesach. The Rush, one of the Rishonim, cites a very important halacha. Now, what if you take something that's not considered edible and you eat it anyway? You eat it anyway. You ingest it anyway. So that's called achshavei, and that is prohibited midirabon. So something that is not food, it's clearly not food, but it is edible and it's consumed as food, can be a problem. Something that is consumed, however, in a manner that's not normal to consume food is not a problem, which leads us to the following principles. Number one, any pill that is not chewable, a pill, a capsule, anything that you swallow whole is that are eaten l'shem refuah, you swallow them to heal yourself, that is not called eating. Nobody says, I'm hungry, let me have a Tylenol. Nobody calls it, would you like something to eat? Yes, here's a Sudafed, right? I mean, other than other problems with that. But nobody does that. That's not considered derech achilo. That's not a normal way to eat. So anything that is swallowable is not a problem on Pesach. What if you're dealing with a chewable? So it's hard to say that the chewables are not food. They're actually designed to be chewed and to be eaten, often flavored. Those would be a problem if they have chametz. Coatings also that are put onto pills that are sweeter could also be considered a problem because, again, they are layered with some sweeteners so that it will be a little pleasant when you eat it. So those things could be a problem. Obviously, if you're treating something that's a sakana, that's a danger, or even a suffix sakana even might become a danger, you're going to take those medications anyway, unless there's an alternative. If you're dealing with a situation where it's not a sakana and the only alternative is a chewable, so we should be in touch because we have to figure out what to do in that, in such a situation. Liquid medications, again, if it's chametz, then that's considered somewhat of a problem. That could be a problem if in the flavorings, in the medications themselves, because those are designed to be ingested in a normal way. if the issue is kitnios, it's likely going to be okay because kitnios are batel berov. And so therefore, you could look at each of those situations. Vitamins, we tend to be a little bit more machmir on. If the vitamins are taken for a medicinal reason, sometimes there's a nutritional imbalance and you need this vitamin. This vitamin is what keeps you healthy. So if it's taken for a medicinal reason, then you treat it like a pill. If it's taken more for a nutritional supplemental reason, really has no measurable impact, certainly over the 8 days of Pesach, maybe over the course of a very long time, right? I take vitamin D. My doctor said I don't get enough vitamin D, which is like not shocking since I don't go anywhere. So, right? So to miss a few days of vitamin D is not the end of the world, right? But if it's something that's important for your health, so then you would take it anyway. Anything for blood pressure, heart disease, kidney, lung disease, cancer, anything even as precautionary, psychiatric medications, all of these things should be taken on Pesach without an issue, especially if they are pills. And even if they're not pills, one should never, ever discontinue medication without consulting and making sure, you know, that situation is the ideal approach to that circumstance. Okay, creams, ointments, powders that are in solid forms can be used on Pesach. Perfumes, there are those that are a little more machmir on to consult the lists because they could contain alcohol and are considered somewhat consumable. But nail polish remover, hand lotion, Purell, hand cream, lotion, shampoo, polish, paint, air freshener, all these things. My advice to you on Pesach is do not eat them. My advice to you after Pesach is still do not eat them. So they are not considered edible and they can be used on Pesach without a problem. Mouthwash and toothpaste, me'ikar adin, is also not considered food. Again, nobody says I'm thirsty, let me go take some mouthwash. Nobody says I'm hungry, let me eat some toothpaste. Obviously we've all taken some of the bubblegum toothpaste from our kids once, you know, whatever. But for the most part, we don't eat these things. They're not food. However, there are those that are machmir, since you put them in your mouth, and so deliberately to check some of these lists. All of them are available. All the lists are, but just so you know, do not have to call the rabbi for the lists. The lists are all available, and I'll tell you exactly where the rabbi is getting them from while he tells you to hold on, because he has to look it up. He is opening on his phone the OU app, Chaf K app, Star K app, and the CRC app. All of these things have all of the information about the products. You can access it. You can access them yourself. And I actually remember telling everyone last year that one of the great victories, rabbinic victories of the pandemic, was the fact that people couldn't, and Rabbi Eilitz's app, yes, especially since it's from California and it's related to Rabbi Yankelevich. But one of the great victories of the pandemic for rabbis was the inability of people to get to Trader Joe's and get exposed to all those hashgachas that none of us have ever heard of. So we didn't have to go chasing rabbis in Brazil to find out if the vodka, whatever, is reliable. But Baruch Hashem, everyone will be back, and or many people will be back. So we'll figure those out. Soap does not have to be kosher for Pesach. Please don't eat soap. And that's the story. Okay, let's talk about the cleaning now. Pesach cleaning versus spring cleaning. This is very, very important. This room could use to be a little cleaner. This is my room. I'm responsible for cleaning it. However, that doesn't mean it's not clean for Pesach. It's actually pretty clean for Pesach. Cleaning for Pesach has to do with getting rid of chametz. Cleaning for Pesach does not have to do with folding clothes or straightening things up or going through your drawer of socks to throw out those ones that are finally not matched. You want to do that, and you want to do the chesed of, you know, gathering all your old coats and everything like that. Beautiful. I think that's wonderful. I think that's amazing. That has nothing to do with Pesach cleaning. Pesach cleaning is about making sure that there's no chametz. So let's talk about Pesach cleaning. I like to divide the house into three zones. Zone number one is areas that we are going to sell. Okay, you're going to put a lot of stuff in a particular space, in a particular room, in a particular cabinet, and you're going to sell those areas. When you sell those areas and the chametz in those areas, there is no reason to clean those areas. You do not have to clean those areas. Assuming you sell chametz gomer, you could put a challah in those areas. Those areas do not need to be cleaned at all. So that includes cabinets that are being sold in the kitchen, rooms that are being sold. Again, these areas need to be blocked off from access. You can't be walking through these areas. You can't be using these rooms. They're not yours. You're leasing them. You're getting rid of everything that's in there from your ownership. You have no right to be in there. The non-Jew needs to have access to those areas and that you're selling the chametz to. And those areas do not have to be cleaned for Pesach. That's zone number one. Zone number two are areas that you're not going to sell, but no one brings chametz in there. The big discussion at the Glasser table last Friday night was, do we have to check the suitcases for chametz? This is one of the jobs of cleaning for Pesach that the various members of the family enjoy the most. And there are always surprises because there's a lot of travel that goes on here, and travel involves granola bars, and travel involves the flat pretzels, I forget what they're called, and travel involves all sorts of things that show up in all sorts of pockets of suitcases. But no one's been anywhere. We haven't gone anywhere. I haven't traveled anywhere. Travel from here to my basement. That's like a big deal. So I haven't used any of these suitcases. So if you literally have not walked into your suitcase closet, you haven't taken out a single suitcase since last Pesach, nobody goes there, nobody brings chametz in there, you're done. You don't have to go in there because maybe someone broke into your house and brought chametz there. There's nothing to talk about. Zone number two, areas that you may not be selling, but no one brings chametz in there. Attics, crawl spaces, behind appliances, you know, that nobody goes to. Nobody goes over there. So those places do not need to be cleaned for Pesach as well. Zone number three are areas that we're not selling and we do bring chametz in. And obviously, if you have more children in the home or you have adults that behave with food with less discipline, you know, it could affect if a room is zone three or zone two, obviously. So zone three, what are we looking for in zone three? We are not looking for dirt. We're not looking for dirt. So I'm looking at my desk now and I see there's a little bit of schmutz because my wife puts flowers on my desk. Sometimes the flowers drop off. And on the desk over here, there's a little remnants of a schmutz of a flower. That does not have to be clean for Pesach. I can leave that there all Pesach. It's beautiful. It'll be great for Shavuos, right? That does not have to be clean for Pesach. The only thing that has to be cleaned off this desk for Pesach, which none of you are going to ever see, is food, is actual chametz. Dirt is not chametz. So if you go to your windowsill, not my windowsill, my windowsills are beautiful. But if you go to somebody's windowsill and you see there's dirt on the windowsill, that's not because someone ate a sandwich over the windowsill. That's not because someone took a tam-tam and rubbed it on the windowsill, unless you have little kids and maybe they are doing that kind of thing. It's because windowsills accumulate dirt. You do not need to wipe that down for Pesach. You can leave it dirty for Pesach and focus yourself somewhere else. You're not looking for dirt. Chametz, to be asur on Pesach, has to be more than a kezias, or if it's less than a kezias, but it's edible. So a crumb, right, that's less than a kezias is not necessarily edible, right? So guk is not chametz. And one tactic that people often use, let's say you're not sure, right? So you're looking at this little black dot over here and you're like, I don't know. It could be a yodel. It could be. It could have fallen off of a yodel. Not for me. I don't eat yodels, but maybe someone else was here with a yodel, right? But it looks like dirt. I don't think it's a yodel, but maybe it's. So you know what you could do if you have situations like that and you're not 100% sure, could either wipe it away or you could take some 409 or some cleaner. You spray it, and now it's not edible. There's nothing to talk about. Now, I'm not suggesting you take challahs and spray them with 409 and render them not edible, but a little bit of dirt here or there, that's what we do. Guk that's under the fridge, you know, behind the oven. We do not move any appliance at all whatsoever to clean for Pesach. We look behind them. If we see there's something there that's that once had a relationship to a Cheerio, but is clearly not a standing Cheerio. You spray it with a little something, you mash it with whatever. If you can reach it, beautiful. If not, not. It's not required to move it out and to find the speck of unedible Cheerio that if you were to ingest it, would send you to the hospital three times over, where COVID would be a cure for eating such a thing. So you're not chayav to do that. You're not obligated to do that. So you're looking for real chametz. Spend time cleaning for Pesach, but spend time strategically. Let me tell you where real chametz shows up. Real chametz shows up in pockets of clothing. Real chametz, when you travel, shows up in suitcases. Real chametz shows up in the car, you know, where it's, you know, you could have a whole winter where there were Cheerios under the seat that are actually somewhat edible, that are not, you know, behind a gas stove or whatever. So when we focus on the things that make sense to focus on. If you don't do spring cleaning and you really just, you walk into a room and you say to yourself, okay, here's a room. It has a bedroom. Here's a bedroom. I don't eat in my bedroom, but I've taken a cracker into the bedroom. So I look around. I clean off some of the surfaces. I vacuum. Maybe I peek under the bed to make sure nothing got under there. Open a drawer. I don't see any food. And there's no reason to assume that I don't put food in my drawers with my clothing. I mean, I don't have clothing. I just have suits, obviously. But, you know, you look in your closet. There's no food. You're done. Move to the next room. That's it. You're finished. You don't have to, you know, make that room look like a hotel. And that's cleaning for Pesach. Okay. Now, so that's getting the actual chametz out. Now the chametz is out, and we don't have to worry about all the different dirt because the house is free of chametz and dirty and ready for Pesach. But we're all in a better mood. So now we get to all of our utensils. So sometimes we want to kosher things for Pesach. So let's talk about koshering for Pesach. To kosher something for Pesach, it's a very simple principle. Kebolo kach poltum. The way it went in is the way it has to come out. Kebolo kach poltum. And that's the principle that you have to remember. So it depends on the material. There are four different ways to kosher something. One is called libun. Libun means you incinerate the absorption of whatever got in there. Our assumption is that through the medium of heat, the metal expands and absorbs the taste from the food into the pot itself. Such a taste could then be expelled through the medium of heat back into the Pesach food. This is the problem with the chametz thick pot. So what do you have to do? You have to extract that taste from the pot. So there are four ways to do that. One way to do that is libun. You burn out the taste. The other way to do that is hagala, which is you purge the taste with boiling water. The other way is called iroi roschim, where you pour hot water over it. And the other is called miloi ve'iroi, and that's where you soak an item. Depending on how it went in, that determines how it has to come out. So what happens? Libun gomer and libun kal, just so we know. Libun gomer means you heat a metal to a glow. Libun kal is where you heat it so that paper would burn on the other side of the heated utensil. Okay, so let's go through the kitchen a little bit. The first thing you have to know is that before you kosher things, you generally have to let them sit for 24 hours with no heated usage at all. We will see there are some exceptions. That's not true for libun. It is true for the others. But in general, you have to let them sit for 24 hours. So when you're deciding what day should we turn over, which this year is a little bit of an easier year because you have a full week of chol. You don't have that like awkward Shabbos in the middle where, you know, what are you doing? So you're deciding which day to turn over. So don't forget that turning over involves koshering. And don't forget that the koshering can't be done unless you let everything sit for 24 hours. China, pottery, earthenware, enameled pots, these types of things cannot be kosher for Pesach. Put them away. You'll use them after Pesach. Glass, according to Ashkenazim at least, should not be kashered for Pesach. That includes Pyrex and these kinds of things. The one exception being a glass stovetop, which we will discuss. Plastic is a machlokas. We generally are, a lot of people are machmir on this. If it's a makam tzorech and you're in a situation where it's absolutely necessary, there are those that are makel on kashering plastic. Flatware, which is like your forks, your knives, your spoons, all those kinds of things. So those could be kashered through hagola. You generally do not use those items over a fire. So the absorption wasn't burned into it. It was boiled into it. So it was boiled into it. It could be boiled out of it. So what do? You clean them thoroughly. You make sure that you fill a pot. The pot should not be used for 24 hours. Many have the custom to kosher the pot first. It's not absolutely necessary. You don't use the pot for 24 hours. You fill up the pot. You have to keep the pot at a rolling boil. And you put the utensils in the pot. And that koshers them. You should make sure they don't touch each other because the water has to get to all the different parts. But unlike toveling in a mikvah, the water does not have to get to all the different parts at the same time. Made the bracha on the last Zoom. I know. I Zoom with other people. So what happens? So you have to, you can't let them touch each other. But so you could take a spoon. Let's say I have a spoon. I have a spoon here. So this pencil is a spoon. Remember pencils? So you could take the spoon. You could dip half of it into the boiling water, take it out, dip the other half into the boiling water, and that's it. So you don't have to like dump all your dishes into this boiling water and then start pulling them out and going to the emergency room. Okay, after you boil them up, you should rinse them in cold water. And you have an extra bonus. I was talking to somebody about this today. That usually we do not kasher kelim from fleishigs to milchigs and milchigs to fleishigs. However, if you're kashering for Pesach, you can switch. So if you take all your milchig kelim and you kasher them to use them for Pesach, if you want to, you can now make them fleishig kelim. And same with vice versa, or parv, or whatever you want to do. Pots and pans, so metal can be kashered the same way as flatware. Again, assuming it's a material that we kasher. Assuming that it was used for something with a liquid medium. So then you could either kosher it in a larger pot or fill the pot with water, get the water boiling, and then take something very hot, drop it in so that the water goes over the edge just a little bit. Be very careful about how big of an item you use. You don't want to displace too much water because you have to kosher the tops of the pots, the rims of the pots. And therefore, the water needs to boil over. And that gets you your pots and pans. If you're dealing with something that is used without a liquid medium, then you need to kosher them with more than water. You need to kosher them directly over a fire with libun kal. Most people will not do that. Most of those pots will ruin if you do that. And so therefore, most people will buy a new, that type of pot for Pesach. If you're in a situation where that's not reasonable, then let me know and we'll figure it out together. Ashkenazim, we generally do not use chametz stick glasses on Pesach, especially if they were used for hot beverages that were chametz or they were washed with things that were hot that are chametz. If they were not used for those types of things, and there is something called milui ve'iroi where you could soak them in a body of water and you change the water three times for a period of 24 hours each, and that could deal with it. But ceramic and china and these types of things, we do not kosher. Appliances that have complicated motor apparatuses, and Dr. Singer's here, apparatusi, you don't get involved with. It's very difficult to kosher those for Pesach. Should have Pesach ones. And that brings us to sinks. A stainless steel sink can be kashered for Pesach. You let the sink sit for 24 hours. Very important. Put a little piece of tape on it to remind everyone. At least 10 people a year call. They accidentally use the sink. Call if you accidentally use the sink. Because if the water is hot or it's warm, it could be that it's fine. Even if it's hot, there are ways to deal with it. But Lamaisa, you don't want to use the sink for 24 hours. And then you take a pot of hot water and you pour it all over every surface area of the sink. This should take a few pots of water. I generally advise people not to use, what are they called? The pots that we put on top that we, whatever those things are called, not to use those type because the water comes out of an opening that's very, very thin. Tea kettle. Thank you, Ham. Tea kettle. Not to use a kettle, because it's very, very thin and it takes many, many times to go over it. If you take something with a wider lip, so to speak, then it takes much fewer times in order to hit the sink. So you hit all the different areas of the sink and that kashers the sink. If you have a sink that cannot be kashered, that's okay. What you're going to need to do is you'll put like something in the sink to cover it up. You're going to be using bins. Very exciting. We definitely used to have to do that. And you'll do that. Yes, 100%. The water that you are using to pour over the sink absolutely must be boiling water. I was just suggesting that you can boil the water in a wider pot and you'll find it easier to hit more of the surface area at once than using a smaller pot. Ovens. So you should clean the inside of your oven. You should be attentive, especially to the door. You should be especially attentive to the door of the oven. A granite, we will get to. Granite can be koshered, assuming that's real granite. Sometimes granite sinks are not fully granite. They're like composites of granite, and that might be more of a problem. But if you're dealing with pure 100% granite, that could be koshered. The ovens that are self-clean. Ovens that are self-clean get to such a high temperature that that's considered Liban Gomer. Liban Gomer means the blios are, the absorbed tastes are incinerated. So if they're incinerated, the good news is you don't have to wait 24 hours for that process. So if you decide, my interconnect connection is unstable. Can you hear me? Still hear me? Everybody can hear me? No issue? Okay. Okay, thumbs up. Okay, great. Thank God it's not true that in all areas of my life, I get these messages about being unstable. Only my internet connection actually tells me that explicitly. Imagine in the shul, if everybody, I'm sorry, I just want you, that drusha was a little unstable, right? Anyway, so what happens? Where were we? The self-cleaning oven, greatest invention ever. So if you decide tonight, right now, in the middle of the year, you're like, I've had enough of this, you know, let's go kosher the oven. You could, without waiting 24 hours, start that self-clean cycle and kosher your oven. Doesn't need to wait 24 hours because it's incinerating the blios. You do have to clean out the oven. There are things you could use to clean them out. Cleaning out the ovens, clean them through with the oven cleaners a couple of times. You do not have to remove, you know, things that are basically become kicked on like part of the oven. You know, I tell people is if it can't come off with your nail, if it can't, you know, then that's it. It's part of the oven now. It's not, that's not food. Obviously if there's something real there, then there's something more to talk about. Okay. So you clean your oven. So you clean your oven and you self-clean your oven and then you are good to go. Something called a continuous cleaning oven. And that might need a little bit more of a visual inspection to make sure that it's cleaner and to make sure those things are going. But essentially, you turn it up to its highest setting for 40 minutes, and that should work. What if you have a regular oven? You don't have a self-clean oven, right? What everyone had for so many years before everybody, you know, started installing things in their kitchen that make everybody look like caterers, right? You just have like a normal poshut oven. So this is a big machlokas at poskim. It's I believe it was Rav Moshe who was machmir on this. So some people say it's a problem koshering a regular oven because it can't get hot enough. So the only thing you could do is what's called Liban Gomer, which means to use a blowtorch to hit every surface of the area of the oven. That's very dangerous and very hard and should only be done by somebody who knows what they're doing. Someone who actually knows what they're doing, not someone who's just off of yeshiva, starting Rosh Chodesh Nisan in your house and telling you they know what they're doing. And if you can't use a blowtorch, so then people would put oven inserts in so that the food did not come into contact directly with the oven. Others are makel on this, and we generally are makel on this. Clean the oven out well, turn it to its highest setting for about 40 minutes, and that should be fine. Okay, some ovens have a convection feature that allows for more heat distribution using a fan. So if the convection oven has a self-cleaning feature, that koshers the fan as well, and that's fine. If there's no self-cleaning feature, then the entire oven, including the fan, while it's circulating, what you do is you kind of spray it with a little bit of Easy Oil. Obviously, don't do this with your face in the oven, so it doesn't spritz all over you. But then you could basically kosher the oven by turning it to its highest setting. What about the stovetop? How do you kosher the stovetop? So we have to get the stovetop the same way it became chametz stick. So there are different parts of the stovetop. First of all, you have the grates. So you have to basically mimic how the grates absorb chametz. The grates absorb chametz if chametz like overflowed from the pot through fire itself. So we have to get fire to hit those grates. So the problem with the fire hitting those grates, you just turn the oven on. So then the fire comes up. It only hits a small section of the grates. Got to get that fire to spread. How do you get that fire to spread? Put a pot on top. You just put a pot on top, you're going to start a fire. So you put some water in that pot, which has nothing to do with koshering and only to do with safety. And that allows the fire to spread out among the grate. Do one burner at a time. Every Pesach, we offer a special carbon Pesach of someone's oven. So you don't want that to be your carbon Pesach. Do one burner at a time so nothing melts and nothing cracks. You'd need about 10 to 20 minutes each. The areas in between the grates, you can cover with foil. Make sure to clean the back of the grates of the oven very, very carefully. Electric cooktops are a little more complicated. You have to clean the burners very well. You have to turn them to the highest settings that they glow hot. Then those areas are kosher. The areas in between, if it's like a glass range or something like that, the areas in between you have to deal with a little bit because you shouldn't really put chametz down on those areas. You can't blowtorch those areas. Pouring water over them is not going to work really. They don't get hot enough to kosher themselves. So some of the suggestions that are made is to put down maybe like break off pieces of pot holder, cork kind of, and put in that area. Covering it with aluminum foil also can sometimes create a problem. It could crack the glass. So that is not recommended. Some people say if you could get like a disc that could raise the pot a little bit up off of the glass area, like about an eighth of an inch, that's also good. That also works. The broiler pan can't be koshered by just turning it on because things are broiled directly onto it. A blech would work. A blech would work, absolutely, to cover. It was asked in the chat, what about putting a blech over all the grates? And that would be fine. So you could replace the broiler pan. You could kosher the broiler cavity by simply putting it on the highest setting of broil for 40 minutes. But where the food sits on, you should either get something new for Pesach or use the burners to kind of flip it upside down and kosher the the side that hits the food. Warming drawers are not simple. Warming drawers don't really get hot enough to kosher the way they are able to absorb to get it out for libun. So a lot of kosher agencies just say, get rid of the warming drawer for Pesach. There is a suggestion that's made by the CRC, which you can rely on if you want, that basically to take a sterno, I take no responsibility for this from a fire or a damage perspective, and neither do they. But they say that you could take a sterno, that's like what we used to use at Shabbatons to heat up the Chinese food on Saturday night, right? And you could put it in the warming drawer, and that will create enough concentrated heat Tekashi, the warming drawer. They do warn you to leave it open a little bit, you know, and that will heat it up enough. Microwaves should be cleaned out very, very well. It's not the craziest thing in the world to get a microwave for Pesach. But if you have a lot of us now, you know, have like built-in microwaves. So there are people who say you can kosher them for Pesach, you can rely on them. Clean it out very, very well. The tray needs to be replaced. You cannot kosher that glass tray that goes around. So be prepared for a little less, you know, little heat distribution issues in your food. Or get like a piece of styrofoam that you could replace it with, or a Pesadik one, whatever you want. And you put a bowl of water inside, and you turn on the microwave for enough time that the water boils and steams up the entire microwave. And with that, you can make it kosher. When koshering the sink and the grates, should the pot being used be Pesadik or could be, as long as the pot has not been used for 24 hours, it's fine. You can use either type. People do kosher the pot afterwards, and people do have a minute to kosher the pot first. The honest truth is, if you're using a pot and it hasn't been used in 24 hours and you boil up water in it, as long as you just kind of throw in something and let it go over, you did kosher it for Pesach. So it kind of koshers itself. So that's not the biggest. Do I need to cover entirely each separate grate with aluminum foil after I burn them? Do I have to cover the oven racks if they're in the self-clean oven while it's in the self-clean time? If the racks can make it through a self-clean oven, you do not have to cover them. If you don't have a way to kosher the racks, then you should, but you could put some holes in them so that the heat could distribute. You have to be careful. The oven's not designed to have a solid shelf without any airflow. And what was the other question? You do not have to cover, once the grates are koshered, the parts that have been koshered, they absolutely do not need to be covered with foil. Countertops. So enamel, plastic, formica, those kinds of countertops need to be cleaned and covered. The granite and marble, you can kosher. You can kosher them. You have to leave them for 24 hours, and then you have to pour hot water over them. To each their own, if you want to do this, Hashem should bless you with many years of shalom bayis. You're going to require many segulos to make that happen. I have been called late at night to a bunch of homes for this. Just understand that the water that comes down your granite counter will go down into the cabinets, and often people who have granite countertops also have nicer cabinets, and so things start to get very wet and very ruined. I did come up with an approach that I did find actually where it was very helpful to use a kettle, and that was, the approach was, like, if you imagine you have a piece of counter, I took two towels. I didn't do this in my home, but I did this in someone else's home. I took two towels. I'm not available to do this in your home, just to get that out there. But I took two towels and made a lane. And in that lane, I would pour the water and then quickly dry it. And then I'd move the lane over, pour water, dry, pour water, dry. And by doing that, I was able to avoid a lot of the issue of the things going down. I would not recommend using steamers. I know that this comes up every single year. And I ask about it every year because I know it would help with convenience a lot for people. And I'd like to do it myself. And every time I've spoken about it with a kashrus expert, they say that most of the steamers that we could get a hold of do not have boiling water. It's a mechanism that creates hot steam, but not because it's boiling water. I have seen some of the kashrus agencies say that you can pour regular water on the counter and then use an iron to kind of create a boiling watery substance on the counter itself. I have no idea if that is safe or a good idea, but I wanted to get it out there because it is something that people do. So you can kashrus it with that. A refrigerator Me'ikra Din just has to be cleaned. You don't really need to start covering every inch of the refrigerator and turning it into one of these Mars rover situations. You really could just kind of clean it out very well. I do tell people that if you're in the practice of putting away hot chametz food in your fridge, and those shells really do absorb hot chametz, you take things from the fire and you just put them in the fridge, then to line them a little bit is not the craziest thing in the world. We do it, but it's not something that's absolutely necessary. I wanted to just hit not every product, but just a couple things that do come up. Just looking to see if I'm still okay. Just a couple things that generally come up. Aluminum foil and aluminum pans do not require Pesach certification. Artificial sweeteners do. Those absolutely need to be kosher for Pesach. Things that come up, again, any type of cleansers like tub cleaners, carpet cleaners, these kinds of things, oven cleaners, toilet bowl cleaners, none of that requires kosher Pesach certification. Coffee, it kind of depends what it is. We have to look into coffee. I'm embarrassed that I came to this year without checking out where we're holding with the vias, but we'll find out. Coffee, generally, instant coffee should have Pesach certification. There are many that are available. Decaf coffee can be a problem because of the way in which decaffeination is done. So that needs to be confirmed that whatever you're using is not a problem. The detergents you use to wash your dishes, they don't really need to be kosher LePesach, but many people just feel like, it's like, it's touching my dish. It's got to have the Hebrew on it, and it's got to have some Rebbe who's never washed a dish in his life, his name right there on the thing. So if that makes you happy, God bless you. And I think that's wonderful. I don't know that it's absolutely required. Eggs are something that we should try to buy before Pesach, possible. Fish. So frozen fish can sometimes be an issue. Someone's weighing in that the OU app seems to say via is okay. All right, Baruch Hashem. Oh, everybody's given their coffee recommendations. Amazing, beautiful, very proud. So frozen fish, they do sometimes add glazes to raw fish. So frozen raw fish, whether it's processed or unprocessed, really should have Pesach certification. But there are known fishes that are known to be okay. Like I believe Kirkland frozen wild salmon is okay as long as you wash it off and it has an OU. Kirkland Atlantic farm-raised salmon is okay as long as it has an OU. Obviously, fresh fish, if you're going to go fishing and you catch a fish, or a fresh fish is not an issue with Pesach certification, just wash it off. Obviously, anything canned that's going through a process does require, someone's saying, only the Kirkland signature salmon, okay? Freezer paper, this seems to be a discussion. I don't think that needs Pesach certification. Frozen fruit. So frozen fruit that is unsweetened, uncooked, has nothing in it whatsoever. No syrup, no citric acid, ascorbic acid, no vitamin C, no nothing. If it's whole or sliced fruit, that doesn't generally need Pesach certification. But frozen fruit that has any sort of sweetener whatsoever should have Pesach certification. And again, canned fruit, even if it says it's packed in its own juice, that mamish, it's from this fruit and we know this juice, we love this juice, we're part of this juice, we're familiar with this juice, still that needs a fresh whole unpeeled fruit definitely does not need Pesach certification. Cut up or peeled fruit is, you do have to make sure is not an issue because citric acid is sometimes used to prevent browning and dried fruit does require Pesach certification. Okay. Hand sanitizer, which was like the biggest question last year, is all good. Please don't eat the hand sanitizer, not on Pesach, not during the year. I believe I saw somewhere that Heinz ketchup is running a kosher Pesach run, which, I mean, if that doesn't tell you that the Gaul is coming, I don't know what does. But that is something to be mindful of. Be mindful of egg matzah. Egg matzah should not be consumed by people who are healthy and do not need it. And that includes egg matzah that's like chocolate covered matzah or those kinds of things. So it should just be conscious of that. Fresh or frozen raw meat that's in its original packaging, as long as it's not ground or cooked or repacked, you know, in any way, regular, you know, normal meat does not need Pesach certification. Wash it off and enjoy it and pay less for it. Milk we've talked about before. We should try to buy before Pesach. And if it's bought on Pesach, it should have Pesach certification. Lactaid should be definitely purchased before Pesach. The chewable pills are a real issue. The swallowable pills, many of the guides seem to be against the swallowable lactaid pills. I'm not 100% sure why. Every time I've asked somebody about it, you know, I think if you're in an extenuating circumstance and you must eat Milchigs right away, like that matzah pizza is like, you know, you're on the buffet and it just has to be, you know, you could probably deal with that. Paper towels, you should not eat paper towels. They do not have to be kosher to Pesach. People do say to, you know, rip off the first and the last one. Sometimes the glues that they use or something that they use as some sort of starch or something. Parchment paper does require Pesach certification. I believe that the Star K certification on some of them and some of the OU ones don't need special Pesach certification, and those you could find in those guides. Quinoa is considered acceptable, but it does need to be kosher Pesach because it is made in places where other things are made. Gloves, I know that a lot of us are using gloves these days. Gloves can be used on Pesach. Sometimes they are lined with powder. That is some sort of starchy something. That is something that should be dealt with. Other things like that, like orthodonture bands, you try to wash off before Pesach to make sure that they're okay. Bag salad needs Pesach certification because they sometimes have issues with also with citric acid and things that they do. Those scouring pads and powders, again, Mikradin, really don't need. Toothpaste, we discussed. Toothpaste does not really need Pesach certification, but, you know, many people will use them. Water became a big hack in the last couple of years where all of a sudden everyone started looking at their water bottles and realized that there was not just water in their water bottles. I remember when the Hashgacha was first given on water for Pesach, and I was working for the OU, I asked them if I could get that job to be the Rav Machshir on the Poland Springs plan, because I thought it would be a great opportunity for career advancement. So, and just to enjoy myself. So unflavored, fresh bottled spring regular water is fine. That doesn't need special anything. But if something's added to the water, if you look at the water and there's fluoride or minerals, so generally, if it's just those kinds of things, then that does not pose a problem. But sometimes there are vitamins that are added or there are flavors that are added, and then that would start to become a problem. So if you see anything in there other than what you would normally put in regular water, then you should start to think about it. And by the way, there are a lot of things today that are packaged and marketed as not having anything added. And then when they hit your mouth, you realize they do. I'm sure everyone's been in this situation where you pass the seltzer and you're expecting seltzer. And all of a sudden you're like, that's not seltzer. That's much too sweet to be seltzer. Pet food absolutely needs to be kosher Pesach. I know there's someone on the Zoom who emailed me about cat food. I will get back to you and we'll figure that out together. Okay. I'm just trying to catch up here. What about Laura water bottles? I remember asking about the powder on the reusable plastic tablecloths, being told that it is fine. Is that still true? I believe so. A faucet aerator, if plastic, can it be koshered with the boil hot water? I would just pour the boiling water over it. And I think that's pretty much it. Okay, we're at 9:36. Last year, we had a shiur on the Seder itself. I'm going to post that shiur so that people can re-engage it. I hope that some of us who had the opportunity to make a Seder for the first time last year are finding a way to either do it again or to play a bigger role in whatever Seder they're participating in. I hope that was one of our growth moments over the course of last year. So I do want to remind you that, you know, it's something to think about, to prepare for the Seder. And this is where I think not going crazy on the cleaning beyond that, which is expected and required, leaves you more time and more space to hopefully be able to invest yourself in preparing for the Seder. The best Sedarim are, the best preparation for Sedarim are short insights to share, not long, you know, Shabbos HaGadol drushes, but bursts of questions and answers that people can appreciate, to think about bringing some questions to the Seder that stimulate discussion. If you are running a Seder that has small children, read through the text quickly so that you don't lose their attention. Many, many, many years of our Sedarim, I ashrayed up those, I should say, I accelerated the reading of the text so that I didn't lose their attention. And then sometimes I come back to it later, you know, and engage it in a more meaningful way. We will discuss next Monday night. There are some Seder prep details that are significant because we're going into it from Shabbos. But otherwise, I wanna wish everyone a Chag Kosher V'Sameach, and really encourage everyone to be able to structure your preparation for this Chag, to allow the experience to be one that is elevating and joyous and unifying and pleasant, and to be able to come to the Seder and the larger experience of Pesach with a real sense of connection to the larger Jewish people and to our story and to what it's really all about. Wish everyone a Chag Kosher V'Sameach. You are welcome to contact me with questions. And Be'ezus Hashem, we'll all have a wonderful Pesach. There will be a shiur on Erev Pesach Shechal B'Shabbos. Then we'll have a Shabbos HaGadol Drasha. And then Be'ezus Hashem, we'll have a shiur special for the Haggadah. And we'll have a chance to learn together, I hope, over Pesach as well. Like I said, you should get the details about Mechiras Chametz soon. And just wish everyone an amazing, amazing Yom Tov.
Thank you. That was great. That was really nice.
Pleasure.